Paul McLaughlin is in with us now, our gardener in residence from Ballacter Garden Centre. How are you keeping?
Yeah, not so bad.
Are you happy enough now that we can start doing stuff? Is the risk of frost over?
No, I'm pretty sure the risk of frost is over.
Well, I predicted this, and you were ultra cold. Actually, since you were last on, there was frost.
There was a wee bit. Nothing damaging, I don't think.
All right, okay. So, I mean, when the sun meets the wind and all that jazz, have you been able to determine whether or not this is the start of a long, hot summer?
Yes, I have an inclination, all right. There's an old saying, I've been watching the trees there, and this year the oak actually leafed up before the ash tree. So they're now saying, there's oak before ash, you're in for a splash, and ash before oak, you're in for a soak.
Right, so what's a splash?
A splash is a wee drop of rain.
Okay.
Whereas it soaks a lot of rain. There always has to involve rain in some way.
But hey, you're going to be at 50% chance of being right.
Pretty much, aye.
So why not?
After last year, put up 60-40.
Yeah. I was joking a little earlier on about, yeah, we can now finally start getting the bedding plants and all that kind of stuff. I would say you've seen a great rush, because with the high pressure, our forecasters, there's a great degree of certainty, isn't there?
Yes.
So they can say, right, it's going to be like this for a couple of weeks. So it's worth taking the garden furniture out if you're lucky enough.
Oh, very much so. A lot of people's barbecued. And to be honest, the bedding plant season, it always sort of coincides around here with First Communions and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're never, people, because the First Communions are always early May, people are conscious of not putting out, but now they're getting an opportunity this year actually to get flowers out and stuff, so there's a big demand for that.
So if you've been waiting in terms of your summer pots, baskets, that kind of stuff, I'm itching in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
Batter on.
Yes, absolutely.
Now's the time.
Yeah, now is the time.
All right. And it's not just that, it's just generally speaking. You know, I see people out. I love to see people out. You know, you see them brushing their walls.
Mm-hmm.
It's normally older people that do that. And I don't mean that in any way. But there's very few. You always see an older person. And I love it. Mm-hmm. They're out. They brush in front of their wall. And then you see them painting the next day. It seems generationally, you don't see as many young people at that. But you do. What you do see is people out and about enjoying the good weather.
Absolutely.
And pottering in their gardens. It's lovely.
I know, funny, it's generation. I don't know if actually whether COVID affected it, the way people sort of started gardening, but COVID seems to have brought on a new generation of gardeners that hadn't been.
Yeah, well, so we've stuck for something to do.
Pretty much so, but we've actually got a lot more now younger people gardening than had been for a few years, if you know what I mean. So it's good to see people are getting more.
And if you want to dip your toe in into it, bedding plants is a great way to start, because you get results.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you can have a look on, be proud, you can track the growth. There's a bit of maintenance there. It's a great way to dip your toe into the gardening world, I think.
Pretty much for the likes of bedding plants, you have, and they're not expensive really in the scheme of things, what the length of time you get out of them, and they're very much, you get instant impact, and they're actually great if you're even gardening with kids and stuff, you know, because you make up your pot today and you have someone to show today, whereas other plants maybe it's a longer process starting from seeds of that, so it definitely is a good place to start.
And also too, you know, I mentioned a little earlier on, if someone's listening in an upstairs flat, you know, and they have one of those little balconies or even a windowsill, you know, obviously it's great if you have a bit of outdoor space, but you don't need outdoor space to be green fingered and to cultivate stuff.
No, absolutely. Like, even a couple of pots can make a wild difference to this place. Like, even sort of if you are in the upstairs balcony, like, it just brings a wee bit of greenery and actually gets more sort of insects and stuff about the place.
And you get the odd scent that comes in through the doors or the windows or what have you. And also, too, we were talking a little earlier on Glenvay, and we're talking about pollination and all that kind of stuff. That's on a grand scale, what they're doing and what they see. But everyone can contribute in that regard, even if you only have a windowsill to play with.
Yeah, very much. That's going to bring a lot of pollinating insects about the place. So it is. It gives them sort of, almost by putting pots around the place, it gives them a corridor to travel from. So they have a wee resting spot, maybe in a pot before they go on about their business. So definitely it all adds to the system.
It's probably a little bit late to start talking about rain harvesting and what have you, but we've already got a hose pipe ban in place in Milford. I don't think we're too far away from similar in Letterkenny. I think Ballybofey Stranorlar, Downing's Carrigart, was it Buncrana was also mentioned. What do we do about maintaining our plants when we're being asked to conserve water?
Yes, there are.
And that's, I suppose, an individual question, isn't it, really?
There are a lot of sort of tips you can do to conserve water and sort of make the most of the water you're using. Generally, avoid water in the middle of the day, because a lot of the water evaporates.
Yeah, wasted.
Pretty much. So early morning or even late in the evening. And if you have beds that in the, like on the, in your garden, putting mulch on them. Mm-hmm. Which I said before, but layers of mulch and bark even, because that
retains that the moisture.
Any moisture okay, in the ground.
Cool.
So there are a good few tips, like you just Google it, there are a lot of tips for conserving water. And like, we're never that far from a shower, so it is not pretty much like water butts are a good option. They're not that expensive.
Yeah, and you'd end up without any intervention from yourself other than maybe shortening your downpipe or whatever mm-hmm. it might be, with an awful lot of water at your disposal.
Absolutely.
And there are, you know, there are items that can pump the water from that as well. Do you know what I mean?
So I know there will be pumps. Everything's got very inexpensive sort of
thing. Yeah, exactly. So water in the mornings or evenings. Hanging baskets, are they particularly vulnerable to drying out?
Yes, they are, because they're up in the air so much, if you know what I mean. So they are quite vulnerable to drying out. But once again, if you get into the habit of sort of checking them at least once a day. And
you'll know yourself.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you'll start to learn the patterns, won't you?
For the hanging basket, the easiest tip is the weight of it. If you sort of like just push it up and down while you know it's well watered. And then if you come along the next day and you push it up and down, it's a lot lighter. Yeah. Obviously, you need water. So it's just...
So if you've got dirty water in your armpit, it's got water in it.
quite possibly. Okay.
Now, what's the balance with... because, you know, some people can kill plants with kindness over feeding on top of the water. Is there a rule of thumb for getting the best out of your bedding plants and other stuff? In other words, the right amount of food, additional food... versus too much or too little?
Yeah, generally the rule of thumb is get into the habit of checking for water at least once a day. Mm. Chances are if you get into June, July, you're going to have to be watering them once a day.
Yeah, yeah.
And once your pot's got good drainage, sort of too much is better than too little. In terms of feeding, because you want a lot out of them, you have to put a fair bit into them. So if you use a product like Miracle-Gro or Tomato Food, every 14 days, just as per the bottle's instructions.
All right, okay.
Generally,
well, you see, that's the thing. We don't always read the instructions,
yes,
do we?
Yes, that's it.
Now, this will become more of an issue, presumably, as the season wears on. You know, flowers have a lifespan. They'll start dying and what have you. How important is sort of deadheading and maintaining? Some people might think it's counterintuitive, but it's not. Is it deadheading's quite important?
Yes, no. By deadheading the plant, you're actually fooling the plant a wee bit. The plant's life cycle is very much produce a flower to produce a seed to get the seed pollinated and basically continue its life cycle. But as you remove the dead flower, you're removing the seed head as well. If you just pinch it off below the base of the flower, you're taking away the seed. So the flower then goes, oh no, I've lost my seed, I need to produce another one.
And nature says here comes another one.
Exactly, so he'll keep producing flowers and flowers and flowers.
But if you leave it, the plant thinks job done.
Yes, exactly. And there's two problems there as well. A lot of time, as the sort of petals of the flower disintegrate, they fall down into the middle of the plant, and they can look untidy, and they can also sort of retain moisture, which becomes a better breeding ground for sort of pests and insects.
What about pests and insects? What do we need to look out for? And disease is a factor as well, too, with some stuff.
Thankfully, with bedding plants, disease wouldn't be a huge problem. The main problem you're going to be facing it is the green fly, which is kind of a constant battle with them. As the year goes on, if you know what I mean. But I suppose vigilance is the key there, in terms of if you're watering every day, just keep an eye on them, and if you see green flies starting, if you get them before it becomes an infestation, they're a lot easier dealt with.
And what do you do? What are you doing?
Generally, if you want to be very sort of organic about it, just a jet of water, like even the end of the hose.
Well, if I want to kill them?
If you want to kill them, fairy liquid and water works quite well.
Excellent.
You do get other harsher chemicals, but the fairy liquid and water should be sufficient. Or, like I say, you get the... You can make up your own garlic spray to become a deterrent for them as well.
So okay.
The handiest way of doing that would be just boil like a bulb of garlic for about 15 minutes, and once the water cools, spray it on. And
then excellent. Okay.
Become garlic flavoured.
You know, you get a lot of regular questions in, as one can imagine. Cats in the garden annoys people, because cats are like dogs. If you have them, you love them. If you don't have them, you don't have them for a reason, and you don't want them about.
Yes. Yes, cats are a regular problem, all right. The main thing about cats is there's all sorts of products available for keeping cats away. And in my vast experience as a gardener, I've never seen any of them working particularly well.
Yeah, that's positive.
So that happens. Or to be honest, cats are very smart.
Yes,
so
of course they are.
And generally they'll find a workaround with the product, if you know what I mean. The only effective thing I've ever seen working with them is water. They don't like getting wet. So if you have cats visiting an area, using it for a toilet or whatever, actually dampen that area for a few days. Just make it undesirable.
Yeah.
And they won't. And if you see the cat coming along, if you have a water pistol handy or the hose, just give them a wee squirt. And they're creatures of habit. So once you break the habit of him going in that particular area,
They'll find somewhere new.
Because, but a lot of people have problems with them at the minute, is polytunnels. In this warm weather, they like to actually hang about in the top. But
Sit up on top of them.
Sit up on top of them. But how they get there is they put out their claws and they dig into the cover.
Tear the living daylights.
Yes.
Okay. Right. That's the voice of Paul McLaughlin. And we'll be getting to your questions to Paul after the break. Right. We are in the company of Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdur Garden Centre, just down the road from us here. And to some of your questions coming in so far this morning. Hi, Greg and Paul. Hello. My hydrangea is in a pot. I haven't touched the branches. It started to green up. What do I cut back?
Generally, if it's greening up now, I wouldn't cut back very much at it, would be the short answer. Basically, if you take a look at it, if you cut it back now, you risk cutting off where the flower buds are going to come out of. So generally, let it green up for you now for a couple of weeks' time. And if there are any sort of dead branches sticking out, I would trim them off, but that's the extent I would do it.
All right. I have a Leandi hedge which is turning brown on the inside. What's causing it and how can I treat it?
Generally, I suppose it depends on the age of the Leandi hedge to an extent, but they naturally turn brown in the inside anyway.
Okay.
It's just basically the foliage is only on the outside.
They're starting to probably see parting and it's probably coming through.
But due to the lack of light inside. So if it's a young hedge, it's perfectly natural. If it's an older hedge, sometimes at this time of year it can be drying out or maybe you've cut it back a wee bit hard. So the general tip there would be give it a good run of fertiliser now.
You do that at the base?
Yeah, just at the base and give it a watering in and hopefully that would actually... Hopefully that'll bring on the green growth.
Yeah, so the inside is, that's nature.
Yep.
And really what you're looking to do now is to promote it to flourish on the outside.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Why is it difficult to grow basil in pots? What am I doing wrong, Paul?
Basil in pots, generally, basil is probably one of the more difficult
herbs
to grow.
We've talked about this before, haven't we?
Yeah, so it is. A few things, a lot of people, if you're growing them from seed, maybe start too early. Basil is actually, because of Mediterranean plants, it likes heat. So you could actually, if you tried starting it from now, maybe you might have more success. The other thing is just to be careful of watering. Generally, people tend to water it a bit too much.
Because if it's from a warmer climate, it's used to less water,
I take it. Exactly, yeah. And even actually for the herbs themselves, the flavours become more intense with less water. So try that out. Basically, a wee bit of liquid fertiliser every so often too should help it along.
My grass isn't green. How can I make it greener?
Make greener, probably fertiliser would be the one. Like lawns, this time of year you cut them 10 times, so you're taking a lot out of the lawn. So generally to make it greener, you need to add fertiliser. If you want to just green it up, someone's fairly high in nitrogen, depending on the size of the lawn. But a good thing for actually greening grass without doing too much would be seaweed.
And how do you put that down?
Generally, seaweed comes granular now.
Okay, sorry, it's a product that you're purchasing.
It's a product, exactly. Right, okay. It is just a refined seaweed from the sea. Like, there are a few companies in Donegal actually doing
it. And it's been ground down.
Ground down, exactly. So it comes from pellet farms, you just put it on like fertiliser.
Would you need moisture for that though?
Generally, it would help, all right. Yeah. Because it's going to be dry for the next few while, if you're doing any sort of fertilising, it's a good idea to water it in maybe.
Possible moss and weeds on people's lawns might sort of, you know, as the ground dries out, might fade a little bit now, but a couple of questions in relation to that, moss and weeds.
Yes, moss and weeds generally is always a problem at this time of year, all right, so it is, and especially after the wet year last year, moss is a huge problem. So pretty much give it a good run with a scarifier, tends to pull out all the moss, and give it a wee overseeding at that point, and that should actually, and now is a good time to do it, because like you say, the moss has dried out and it's become looser almost, so it's a bit easier to remove.
Okay, so get out of that now. Can you ask, I need to have very well-bloomed hanging baskets for outside my house for an important event in the third week of May. I don't know if this is a brand new question. We're in May now, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
This is next week. All right. Where would be best to get them, please?
I suppose your local garden centre should have them.
You can have a ton of colour. You might not have that maturity of the hang, or maybe you can get more advanced plants.
To be honest, it'd be rare to get them advanced at this time of year, because people want them to last the season. So if you have them produced too early, they don't last.
But freshly planted, they're still going to look wonderful.
Freshly planted. And the other thing to do was, if the hanging baskets will go in your local garden centre have enough flowers in them themselves, they probably will have plants there that have flowers this week. So you just go and you could actually do them up yourself, you know.
My garden's covered in dandelions. Any advice? Should I leave them, cut them with the lawnmower, or is there anything I can use to kill them off?
Killing them off, generally dandelions tend to be very sporadic through a lawn. Probably the handiest way is to actually physically dig them out.
Yeah, and there's wee tools you can get.
Daisy grubbers, I think they're called.
You push them in and rotate, I think.
Just pull them out that way, if you know what I mean.
Does that take much ground with them?
No, it doesn't really. Don't really have to repair it even.
All right, brilliant.
So digging them out like that there, a lot of people advocated them and not leaving them for the month of May for bees and stuff like that. So if if you weren't concerned about a very, very tidy lawn, you can do that for a while. Or even just cut them a little lawnmower, they tend to...
Top them, really. You're topping them off.
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of an indication when you need to get the mower back out again. Morning, could you ask the gardener why has my laburnum have its flowers hidden and green foliage shown more this year? Is it because it wasn't pruned last year? When is the best time to prune? Also, I have hanging laburnum, which flowered the first year but never flowered since until this year, but it has shoots going in all directions. How can I sort it out? Coming in from Bernie there.
Very good. Well, at least they sound to be good, healthy trees, you know, yeah. So if they have plenty of green foliage. For flowers like that, what you'd want to do, your laburnum probably in the springtime would be treated with a bit of potash, which is going to encourage flowering. Mm-hmm. Laburnums are actually lovely trees, so they are now, I see one just down there, about 100 yards down the road from here, flowered out at the minute. So they're just coming into flower now, so I wouldn't be too concerned yet for another week or two, because the flowers are hidden, it may actually be just that there are more flowers coming.
Yes.
The other thing was, if the flowers are hidden, you could trim them back a wee bit now, but generally, like, sort of into early mid-autumn, by the time to give it a proper pruning, if you're going to, if the leaves come off.
But wait and see, it might come into its own. Yeah. But,
generally, treatment of potash in the springtime should encourage better blooming.
Here's another one, actually, on laburnum trees. Only half of it bloomed this year. What's going on? Good, maybe it's early, I don't know.
Good question. Maybe it's sustained a wee bit of damage on the other side or something, if you know what I mean. But possibly one set on a picture. If you don't mean to bring a picture to your local garden.
Yeah, it might be more evident.
That's hard to say, to be honest. But once again, a fertilising might help.
Yeah, but the fact that it's half and half is a bit peculiar.
I wonder, is it bloomed in terms of with the flowers or with the leaves?
Yeah, okay, well, we can check that out. You talked about cats. How can I keep hens away from my flowers? I mean, are they their own hens? Mm-hmm. Are these neighbours' hens? I mean, yes. I don't know. Maybe they're free-range hens that are going at the flowers.
Can they coexist? They can coexist. A lot of people actually, a lot of vegetable growers would actually put hens in through their stuff.
Right.
Because it's a natural treatment for slugs.
The hens are picking away.
They're going in, so they let them in for maybe an hour a day just to pick through the stuff, you know. Because generally it's the slugs they're looking for, it's not the flowers that they're looking for. So apart from fencing them off that particular area, I don't know much, to be honest.
No. I mean, you're not going to use a water pistol on hens.
Possibly not.
Right. I have a 21-year-old golden Lelandi hedge around my property. I'll be demolishing my home this summer due to defective concrete, and I want to get rid of the hedge while I'm at it. My question is, if I cut it at the stump, will it grow back, or should I get the roots out with a digger? But I have other trees, shrubs planted about 3 metres from it. Will their roots be damaged in the process? So this is interesting. This is a mature garden. They've got stuff they want to maintain. They want to get rid of the hedge. If they get rid of the hedge, roots and all, are they going to damage roots of nearby trees or what have you? Or if they cut it down to the stump, is that the end of the hedge?
Yes. Basically, Lelandis, if you cut it down to the stump, that is the end of the hedge. Mm. The hedge won't grow, but you still have the problem of the roots in the ground. In an ideal world, you probably would dig them out with a digger and re-soil it, depending on what you're going to do with it in the future. Like, chances are the person's going to plant a new hedge, maybe a different hedge. So I would try and remove the roots, but suppose gently be the way to go with a digger, in the sense that you have a couple of problems there. You could have damaged the other plant roots, which 3 metres away you shouldn't. It should be fine. Mm. So any roots going out 3 metres should be soft enough that they'll just come away.
And then just regrow if they...
But the other problem you need to watch out for is like water, phone, power and septic
tank. Yeah.
A lot of times if you pull the roots, they can be round pipes and stuff like that, so just you have to be very careful.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you believe you know the location of those pipes, they could...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
I have done it myself on many occasions.
Right, okay, it doesn't surprise me because you can see how easy it could be done. Mm-hmm. All right, okay, listen, that's all we have time for, unfortunately. Don't forget, Paul at Balagdar Garden Centre, and experts in all of our beautiful garden centres right across the Northwest. They love to get your questions. As you heard, as it related to that tree question, don't be afraid to call in and bring a picture with you, and they'll be more than happy to give you some advice or what have you. But for now, Paul, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And we'll chat to you in the not-too-distant future. That's Paul McLaughlin there. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after these. Now, many of you text in. We had Amir in talking about the new Islamic Centre in Letterkenny. Caller says, do some research into the Islamic religion. There's no Muslim religion. Islam has a very strict belief that only they are correct and will go to extremes to maintain this. There are very dangerous elements at work here, and I noticed that Greg's avoiding this totally. I presume the attitude is that if any religion or people with any belief system comes in, they'll come in and try and dismantle it or point to this, that and the other, which means that you could have no interview with someone who is Muslim without going into the ins and outs of elements of their religion. Do you know what I mean? Think about if the shoe was on the other foot, that would be, how would you ever have any conversation other than a confrontational one? Hi, Greg. Just as you mentioned, cycling. I was driving out towards the Dry Arch yesterday evening. There was where there was over 50 million euros spent on pedestrian and cycle lanes, and a cyclist was on the actual road cycling. That's not unusual, it would seem. All right, in studio with me is our own Donna Marie Doherty, presenter and producer of Oz to Protect on Highland Radio. Hi, Donna Marie.
Hello, how are you keeping?
Good to have you with us. Right, this is the second season of Oz to Protect, isn't that correct?
Yeah, it sure is. We did put out our first episode last night, and it is available now to listen back to on the playback section of the website. Different format, it's half an hour long, and it's all child-led this time, which actually is... It's really exciting, so it is to get the young voices on, and they're actually just, they crack you up. They're so funny.
All right, let's talk about last night's show.
Yeah, it was on biodiversity, and the guests on it was Julie Corey, the biodiversity officer for Donegal County Council, and then Angus Kennedy from Nature Northwest. So we were talking about what biodiversity means, how we can promote it with Julie, and then we did a bit about bees, and it's just that time of year. And then... based on what the kids were saying, they were telling me about a school trip they did where they learned about birds that nest on the ground. Mm. So we spoke to Angus a bit more about that there and what to look out for and how to make sure that you don't stand on any nests.
Yeah, it's nice to for the next generation coming through to see where their level of knowledge is at, which is great thanks to our schools, but also, you know, what they can do. It's their world, you know.
It is, surely. And, you know, every time I chat to... You know what, I think the youngest person I've spoken to now is 7 and the oldest has been around TY age, and they're so, so knowledgeable on it. They're far more switched on, I think, than I was at that age. Like just the niche understanding and the niche understanding they have of like Donegal related species and things that are happening locally. It's incredible.
Right, you're also pairing up with the Harvard Climate Institute for Climate and Sound. Right, what's this about?
So... what's happening is we are getting out these recording devices and they're called audio moths. And essentially it's going to be zip tied to a tree. And the purpose of this, it's a long form. Ah! Yeah, exactly. Ah! That is it.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's going to be long form. So we're able to set it. We're able to set it that you can get all the different kinds of Gregs and see what they are in the trees. But it's kind of like the first of its kind of the research. I was down for a training there. And what they're using it for is class.
So what might it tell us, Donna Marie?
It can tell migration patterns. Mm. It can tell what kind of species are about. You can then maybe use that to delve into why are they there? Were they there? Have they left? What factors are around, you know, if it's placed near a road.
Because the sounds are so distinctive, aren't they? You know, visually, people might say, oh, well, I saw this. And, you know, there could be some sort of misunderstanding or what have you. But if you capture the sound of a particular, presumably it's primarily birds, is it?
I think for this one, it will be primarily birds.
So, you know, you get the sound of a cuckoo. We were talking to Lee about that a little earlier on. You know, it's clear what it is, but it's also... you can't dispute it. It's there and you'll know in the general area that it was. I'm just using the most obvious and basic example.
No, so surely.
I think really it's the data will drive what we learn from it rather than trying to reaffirm what we already know.
It will. In the past, it's been used to track the migration patterns of the spotted owl that was over in America. So they had loads of the devices taped to different trees and they were able to see how it moved throughout the day. Why was it going to certain places? There was another incident where they had it in a coral reef. Mm-hmm. And then, so they had it before, then a hurricane hit. They had it during the hurricane and they had it after. So they were able to see which species left. But then they started playing the audio from before the hurricane and it actually attracted the native species back. So it helped to repopulate it.
There you go. That's the power of sound.
Yeah.
So where are they going to be located?
Here with us, that's what I'm on here now because I'm calling out.
I know that, but I was trying to do it in a very natural way.
Well,
so as if it was conversational, Donna Marie. I know that's why
I am as subtle as they come.
Beginning like a wrecking ball. Right, so really you're throwing it out there,
So the whole point of Ours to Protect this time is that it's child-led. Yeah. So it's wherever the young people want to put it. The only disclaimer I will have is that it needs to be somewhere that I can go change batteries on it. So if it is at your school, please don't arrest me for trespassing during the summer because I'll need to change the batteries on it. So it's if you, like Lee was saying this morning, if you hear a cuckoo around your school and you want to capture that, that would be ideal.
Okay.
It generally will need to be kind of up high because it can need to be close enough to capture it. So the idea is that it's close enough to capture it and it's not going to be disturbed by kind of other sounds around it, you know, like traffic and things like that there.
So you want as little noise pollution as possible. So to locate where and throw it out to young people out there, primarily probably on this show through their mums or dads or schools or what have you, where would be good a good spot in your local area? And I suppose the more activity there is potentially, the better as well.
But
because you'll pick up bats and everything with
that's
an
it.
Audio
so it can be set. So there's loads of different settings on it. It needs to be set to a different frequency for bats.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know that there's bats in the area and you want to see how many, is it a seasonal kind of thing? Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Okay,
it's
so how do people give their suggestions? Because you're going to leave this open until...
Tomorrow week,
okay. So how do people contact you?
They can email me at donnamarie@highlandradio.com.
All right, and it's about, you know... Wait, maybe it's at your school. And I think, you know, this would be a nice thing for teachers to sort of tie in.
It will, surely, and it is. It's the first of its kind. So, you know, we're doing it here in Donegal, but there's 16 other stations across Ireland doing it.
Mm.
And it was Dr. Cara Oler was saying, you know, that this data is going to be used and referenced for years to come because there has been no kind of widespread study of Ireland on climate sound. So it's exciting.
It is, yeah. And we are one of 15 or 16 around the country making it part of the first time this has been done on scale throughout the island of Ireland. So it's not exclusively for schools. It could be you'll know yourself somewhere close to you where there's a lot of, potentially a lot of activity, I presume, yeah?
Yeah, and you know what? Even if it is a case where you used to hear birds and you don't now, you know, why has that changed? You know, like, is
the sound of silence will not tell us anything, Donna Marie. I know that as a...
But there'll be other
sounds. I got a D in science in sixth class.
How did you got graded in sixth class?
No, but I never went to proper school really properly, so I never did a state exam, so I had to make something up. So in other words, the absence of something in and of itself can be quite telling.
And why that absence is there, you know. It's...
And who will you liaise with the suggestions? Is this going to be your call, or you mentioned a doctor there? Are you going to sort of liaise with them, or is that to be determined?
To be determined, you can let me know if you have any ideas, and we'll have a wee process of just sorting through it, and then.
Okay, that's only part of the wider project, which is Ours to Protect.
Mm-hmm.
It is a scheduled program, but on demand as well. Maybe even play it in the classroom. Who's to say? It is certainly led by and geared to the whole population, but hopefully will be of particular interest to younger people. We've had the first 30-minute episode. It was broadcast last night. It's a podcast for you now on our website. And then the next five episodes then are broadcast...
It's going to be the second Wednesday of every month. So the next episode's on the 11th of June. And if you have any thoughts on food waste, you can send in a voice note. You can send emails on your questions, thoughts, ideas.
Excellent. All right. That's Ours to Protect. That's Donna Marie Doherty. Her email address is donnamariedoherty@highlandradio.com.
No, donnamarie@highlandradio.com.
Is it really? Okay. Mm-hmm. donnamarie@highlandradio.com. And get your suggestions in, whether you're a school or an organisation or an individual, where would be a good place to place one of these audio moths. And it is part of a project amongst a load of different stations. We're going to have them all around the country. And as you say, this will be information that will be, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be referenced for the ages.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Donna Marie. Really appreciate it. Donna Marie Doherty there. As I say, just to remind you one more time, you can listen back to that podcast. Podcast right now on our website, on demand, highlandradio.com. Right. Now, tomorrow is Friday. Just to give you an early reminder that we'll be discussing all the big stories of the day and week, even stuff that might break overnight with our Friday panel. And we've so much more besides. So tune in to that from 9. But now I'm going to go to our language planning coordinator at Lienre Letterkennen. And that's Barbara Ucahill. Good morning to you, Barbara. How are you keeping? Lovely to see you.
Goramayagat Greg, Tamagahanwai Arfad, I'm Gran, thank you.
Lovely stuff. Now, a wonderful Day of Irish is upcoming this weekend. Talk to me about what people can look forward to and get involved in, Barbara.
Yes. So we have a full day going on the Gaelscoil on Saturday, the Gaelscoil in Glencar. So we have a Gian Chursa, or one-day Irish course. So anybody, maybe they've never done any Irish and they would like to get a taster, or maybe they want to dust off their Irish because it's a bit rusty, or people who are more fluent who want to kind of, you know, just enjoy the experience of being immersed in it for the day. We have three levels going on, three very good tutors. So that's from 10 until 4 on Saturday.
There's a lot of people that I've spoken to and encountered, and they would love to dust off their Irish. But we've talked about it in the past. Sometimes people are embarrassed or feel uncomfortable or feel they'll be judged. This is the perfect environment to go in there and see how you get on in a completely judgment-free environment.
And it's called, the Irish is Gian Chursa, but we're not going to be too Gian or intense on anybody. It'll be a bit of crack. There's classes or kind of workshops from 10 until 1, and then lunch. And then from 2 o'clock, there's a storytelling workshop with Gara Jean Bratnick, who is fabulous. And even for people who don't necessarily understand all of it, the flow of her language is just beautiful to listen to. And then from 3 until 4, there's a Shan Knows Dancing workshop with Frank and Eileen Sweeney. So it's just a really creative way to engage with the language. And even if you don't have a lot, you'll still know what you're doing. So the aim is on bringing people together, having a lot of fun with it, speaking Irish, you know, engaging with the language in ways that are creative and sociable. So all of that is going on. It only costs a tenner. You get your lunch provided. People can sign up for that. And we do want people to register for it so that we have numbers on lionralc.ie. So that's lionralc.ie. That's our website. You can go on there, go into the shop and book the class. And then from 1 until 4, again, in the Gaelscoil, on the same day, we have a family day. And there are going to be games outside in this glorious weather. There's going to be an art and craft workshop with Sheila Niari from Tishmahore in the Gaeltachta. And there is going to be a storytelling workshop for the kids as well. And there'll be tea and coffee and the chance for a chat and all the rest of it. And we've got Cúla Cathair, Nuacht Cúla Cathair, are coming to film as well. And they'll be looking for kids with Irish who'll have a chat with them on the telly. Lovely. So that's quite exciting.
And, you know, people talk about engaging and being in contact with the language or the culture. It doesn't actually mean you have to speak it either. You know, you can be around it as well and take from it what you wish. And, you know, dancing, poetry, you know, whilst they might be in a language, you know, they're also in a international language too, in that, you know, how sounds are formed and how they float.
That's it, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's not too prescriptive either. I mean, obviously, listen, it's about promoting Irish, but I think it might be very pleasant for those, you know, just to a taster to see where they're at.
That's
with their
exactly.
In their life.
And it's, particularly the beginners class. You know, there are people from all over the world doing Irish classes with us already. And we know there are a lot of other people who've never had the opportunity to do Irish who would love to do that. Mm. So come along on Saturday, you know, sign up with us, or even just give me a ring, 086-075-1663, and tell us you're coming along on Saturday and just get introduced to the language. We have Breach Niachna working with that group, and she uses song as a way of introducing people to the language. We have Shano Davin working with the group, who have a certain degree of fluency. And then we have Dúna Longain, who is a poet and writer and Seanachie, working with people who have more fluency, and they'll be able to dip into some of the folklore and stuff like that. So fabulous workshops that will really give people a great opportunity to engage Lovely. With the language.
And it's registering. You want to know the numbers as well. It's only a tenner, and that includes your lunch. So how do people, you mentioned your number there, we'll retain that if anyone wants to give us a call. Is there a website or an email that people can sort of express an interest as well?
Yeah, absolutely. They can go on to our website, which is lionralc.ie. So that's lionralc.ie. We have a shop on there. Go in there and you'll find the Gian Chursa. Mm-hmm. That's what it is in Irish, a one-day Irish course. Give me a ring on 086-075-1663 or...
And it's all at the Gaelscoil in Glencar. Isn't that where you said?
Yes, it's all happening there. Yeah.
Lovely. And lovely bit of outdoor activity involved in there as well, given the beautiful weather that we're having. Thank you, Barbara. That's it. Slán, thank you so much. Bye-bye. Barbara E. Cahill there, Language Planning Coordinator at Líonra Eléctrica 9. 086 60 25000 is our WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Even though it's late in the show, the lines are still open. Right now, Paddy Doherty is owner of Doherty's Hospitality, and they have just bought McGrory's Hotel in beautiful Kildaff. And Paddy's with me now. Good morning, Paddy.
Good morning, Greg. How are you? Thanks for having us on.
No, it's great. And we wanted to bring you on to celebrate something, because it's important. A lot of conversation about closures and all that type of stuff. So when we have a sort of an iconic business reopened, reimagined, it has to be celebrated too, I think.
Yes, I think. I'm in business in an engineering company for 40 years. I own a group called Electro Automation. And about a year ago, we went in and we opened up Doherty Hospitality. And we initially wise bought the Eagle Eagle Pub in Glastool. And we're currently trying to buy the Queen's in Docky. And then in the last couple of months, we were approached about McGrory's. We heard the news that McGrory's had closed down after 100 years. And we got an approach to see could we purchase it. And I met Kieran and Stephen Devine, the two owners, and we came to a very, very successful negotiations. And I'm very proud today to be the new owner of McGrory's.
And it's a very proud day because it's opening today. Why? What is it about this project and meeting the former owners that, with someone like you, Paddy, you know, it has to click with you not just a financial level, I would imagine, at this stage in your career. There has to be something else there that captures your interest. What was it, if I'm correct in how I framed it?
Well, I say I've been 40 years to be an overnight success. So when I heard McGrory's was up for sale, I was absolutely, you know, amazed. And it's been a great McGrory's. We grew up with McGrory's. McGrory's has been a great tradition, family tradition of music, culture, best of food, hospitality, everything. And I was absolutely, you know, great opportunity to be able to buy it, actually. And I've accumulated a great, an absolutely fabulous team under Udo Whitman. And we have most of the original staff back on the premises again. We're totally doing a big tidy up today. And we have our Minister, Charlie McConnell, doing an opening today at 3 o'clock. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, and also more important for the area, it's in McGrory's in Kildaff is actually a cultural part for the whole area. Mm. And the number, I think we've got over 100,000 wishes and everything else since we made the announcement, you know. So it's been great.
And obviously, you know, it has been standing there for a long time, holds an awful lot of memories and tradition and what have you. That's there. But what do you want to or have you brought to the experience, Paddy? Because you'll want to put your own impression on it, your company's own sort of fingerprints all over it. So what is the plans or what has changed so far?
Well, I think we've got the best culinary team under Udo, and I think what we're doing from Malin Head, we're taking the best crab, lobster, oysters from the area, totally organic food, vegetables, all local food, and putting that together and having an absolutely top-class, four-star quality cuisine here for Inishowen. And also then with our 18 bedrooms, and separately-wise, we have 9 bedrooms coming on board in Malin Head. Towards the end of the year. So that will have 28 bedrooms for the area, which is badly needed in an acute shortage of good accommodation in Inishowen.
Yeah, and it sounds, you know, fantastic.
Inishowen is probably the best. We're all prejudiced up here, but we think Inishowen is the best place in Donegal.
Well, today I'm going to let you have that one, Paddy, because it's such an important day. And listen, it's right on the Wild Atlantic Way as well, so you get the pleasure of welcoming, you know, the local community, people from the wider area, but also our visitors, to give them the Donegal Cade Me the Fulture.
Yes, indeed, and I look forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting people coming in, because even since we started doing renovations in the last few weeks, every time a door was open, people are trying to come into the place. So it's been great, absolutely. And we're looking forward to it. looking forward to all the locals coming back.
Because, of course, you know, you're viewing this as an all-round, all-year-round, you know, we have the tourism season and now we sort of the shoulders of that season are spreading out. It almost runs now from Easter to Halloween. But you want this to be a busy, thriving business 52 weeks of the year, I'd imagine.
Yeah, no, we're going to open it all year round. We're going to have music, top-quality music here on Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And then we're going to have big acts every 2 weeks. We have Sean Keane here on the 29th of May. And it's been sold out. I think we have some more tickets being available. But we're trying to bring music. McGrory's has always been the home of music. So I'm trying to keep that culture alive, both music, food, and keep all the traditions that it is there, keep it going.
Yeah, these hotels and businesses are vital to an area. They lift everyone, especially big, significant businesses like this. So congratulations to you. A wonderful day. Enjoy the opening with Minister McConnell Ogat too. And continued success, or success. Of course, the company's incredibly successful, but we wish you nothing but success at McGrory's Hotel in Coldaff going forward.
Great, Greg, and thank you, and a big welcome to anybody who wants to come and see us.
Lovely stuff. All right, Paddy, well done. Enjoy the day. There you go. As I say, we like to celebrate stuff as well, and that's brilliant. We were speaking to Oliver in Downings, right in the heart of Downings, really important centre, 7 or 8 offices there. The trunk of fibre broadband runs past the building, but they've been told they can't get fibre broadband there. It's available either side of them, but for some reason they've been told they can't get it. Very frustrating because it's a tourist area. The mobile coverage is intermittent, probably fine in the winter to some extent, but when the visitors arrive, the content ratio means that the download and upload is squeezed. You can be there with 5G and not even be able to use your phone. We're still pursuing that to see if we can get any firm answers from either AIR or the National Broadband Scheme. I'm sure they're making their own inquiries, but we're looking into that as well. So then, of course, we got other people contacting us in similar situations. Good morning. I'm in the exact same situation with the broadband as Oliver. It's actually running past my house. And because I'm on the town boundary, but not far enough away rurally, my neighbours on either side of me have access to high-speed broadband. There are 2 members in the household working from home, which on some days can be quite difficult. That's coming in from the Carndonagh area. I had the same problem with broadband in Dunfanaghy. They wouldn't allow me to get higher speed broadband. As they said, my speed was fine. I managed to get around it by using my neighbour's air code as their broadband speed was slower. Okay, I don't know what the blocker is in Downings, but hey, fair play to you for getting one over. Hi, Greg. We have the right to protest in a public place, says a listener. Our councillors are trying to subvert democracy. Why no town hall meeting and iPass centres? Their silence is complicity. Must be the same. That's a phrase that keeps coming in. I don't think there was much support, to be honest with you, for restricting protests on the main street. And for a very good reason. Lots of people are involved in issues that they might want to go down that street protesting in the future. Who's to say? I didn't really think it was a fantastic idea to begin with. I understand where the idea of it was coming from, but we don't need any more controls on us as people. We need our rights, and those rights need to be protected, I think. Okay, we are going to bid you adieu. We're going now because we're going to be coming back to you tomorrow morning at 9. But you won't be lonely because John Breslin's coming up around the northwest. Then after John, David's in, keeping you entertained, hopefully out in the sunshine with the best of country music and some classics chucked in. Ivan Borland's in then. And it's Thursday. It's hard to keep track of everything that's upcoming. But needless to say, we're going to keep you right up to date. Again, new listenership figures out today. Thank you very much for your continued support here of the 9 till noon show year on year. We're thereabouts. You know, maybe Caroline has to look at a half hour here or there. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, listen, we really appreciate the tens of thousands of you that listen to the show every single day and throughout the course of the week. That's embargoed to 12, so I'm not strictly going to mention it. But by the time it comes around tomorrow, I'll have lost interest. But I will not have lost interest in thanking you for your continued support. I was trying to fill a bit of time, and as it turns out, I've overdone it. I've over-egged the custard. Have a great day. We'll chat to you tomorrow morning at 9.